It's Wednesday, May the 26th, and you're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. Before we start, I do want to point you in the direction of a brand new podcast from the Irish Times. In the News features our reporters talking to presenters Circa Pollock and Connor Pope about the major stories which they're covering at the moment. And on today's episode, Circa talks to Dan McLaughlin and Naomi O'Leary about the aftermath of that forcing down of the Ryanair flight over Belarus at the weekend. Do have a listen. I do highly recommend it, and it's available on all the usual platforms. But on to matters closer to home. With me today are Jennifer Bray and Pat Leahy from our politics team. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Top of the morning to you, Hugh.
And we're also delighted to welcome back Aidan Regan, who's an associate professor at the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Welcome, Aidan.
Thanks for having me.
Today we wanted to discuss Sinn Féin's path to power. We can never rule out an unexpected election, but if this current coalition goes according to the plan which was devised by its three constituent parties, then this government has somewhere between 3 and almost 4 years to run. And there does already seem to be a widespread acceptance in many quarters that that is the point when the current main opposition party, and currently the most popular party in the country, namely Sinn Féin, will finally enter government in Dublin. But it is a long and winding road from here to there. And Pat, you entered some caveats on that prediction in your column at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in the business of giving either gambling or investment advice, Hugh, for good reasons, but I was suggesting to people that the overwhelming consensus, and the thought was implanted in my mind just reading some of the papers of the previous week and weekend, in which a number of normally sane columnists and writers simply referred to the absolute inevitability of Sinn Féin in government, leading the next government, indeed, after the next election. And while there are certainly strong reasons to believe that Sinn Féin is on course for such an outcome, I think there are also reasons to doubt the inevitability, I think is the best way to put it, of that outcome. You know, if you look at things like, you know, the housing crisis, that's a huge wind behind Sinn Féin. Very unlikely. You would have said that that is solved by the time of the next general election. So that's still likely to be a force behind Sinn Féin. The fact, I think, that before too long, whatever the correctness of that judgment, and that's a topic I suppose we can come back to, the government will be accused of implementing austerity. And that, again, I think will be, you know, a huge wind behind Sinn Féin. And the other reason, you know, to believe that Sinn Féin is on course for government is the fact that the Sinn Féin will be credibly able to assume the mantle again of change. And that's a really powerful position to come from when fighting a general election. So there are very good reasons to believe that Sinn Féin is on course to be part of or to lead the next government. But I don't think it's inevitable. And a couple of the points I was making is, you know, in support of some doubt about the inevitability of that outcome is the fact that, you know, if you look at Sinn Féin's polling since the last general election, it has plateaued at a pretty high level, but still more or less neck and neck with Fine Gael in all published polls, say this year. The other thing is that winning additional seats is hard. There are some, there are some seats that Sinn Féin should reasonably be able to pick up, even without an increase in its votes. But other seats will be difficult, and winning second seats in constituencies will be difficult. But, you know, perhaps the biggest reason, I suppose, that I identified for caution on the predictions of the inevitability of Sinn Féin in government is the fact that the next election, assuming all the government parties act rationally in their own interest and don't bring down the government, is that the next election is 3 to 4 years away. And given the volatility of all politics, not just in Ireland, and also the fickle nature of the Irish voters, three or four years is a lifetime. You know, if you think 3 or 4 years ago, say 2017, Enda Kenny was still Taoiseach. The Eighth Amendment hadn't been repealed. You know, reports of the British press were full of the inevitability of 10 years of Theresa May in Downing Street. So I just think that in a situation where politics is characterized perhaps above all by its volatility. Remember that in the weeks before the general election, Sinn Féin, lots of people have pointed out that if they ran more candidates in the 2020 general election, the party would have won more seats. That's absolutely true. But in the weeks before the general election, Sinn Féin was dumping candidates off tickets because it believed it was running too many candidates. Why did it believe that? Because there was no sign at that stage of this huge surge in support that the party enjoyed in the course of the general election campaign. So I just think in an in an atmosphere of such volatility in politics, making very bold cast iron predictions 3 to 4 years out is a bit of a mug's game.
Aidan, I mean, Pat makes a number of very good points. I think the best of all really is about, you know, the passage of time. Should this government survive 3 years or more is a very, very long time. Having said that, Sinn Féin itself, as a political party, presumably intent on entering government the next time around, can only control what it can control. And as Pat also says, the wind is set pretty fair behind its sails. As we look at the situation at the moment, it's unexpectedly good performance at last year when it actually left, as Pat said, a number of seats behind it on the table, which you would think should be easy gains for it next time out. A high, although admittedly plateauing, position in current opinion polls. But then the things which are within its control, I suppose, are its performance in opposition over the next 3 years, and its electoral strategy, that particularly tricky thing, which we know from large parties in Ireland going back over the whole history of the state, of getting that second seat, or maybe even a third seat in a small number of constituencies. You know, you would be expecting, wouldn't you, Mary Lou McDonald to be bringing in a running mate in Dublin Central, second seats in a number of other Dublin constituencies, maybe in Cork as well. But these things are easier said than done.
Yeah, no, completely. And, you know, there's all sorts of intra-politics that take place within constituencies and who gets selected and who doesn't. And you have all sorts of, you know, personalities there. And, you know, parties are complex beasts and they often don't make what might perceive to be the rational or optimal decision from the outside, mainly because of internal politics. So, I mean, I think Pat's crucial point is very true. Volatility is the word here. I think there is nothing inevitable or really predictable about politics. I mean, my favorite book, one of my favorite political science books is by Paul Pearson. And it's called Politics in Time, and all politics takes place in time and can be hit by all sorts of tornadoes and slow moving earthquakes and so forth. So we just don't know. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much that's indeterminate about the future. And, you know, there's so much you would not have been able to predict. But I do think that Sinn Féin certainly are very well placed at the moment to be able to adopt a particular strategy. Whether or not they are in a position to lead the next government, of course, is completely dependent upon numbers. And Ireland is a multi-party system, right? And our parliament is highly fragmented at the moment. The electorate is very polarised. So arguably, you could make the case that the stability of the vote is actually between the two centre-right parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. Now, Fianna Fáil, of course, are struggling more than Fine Gael, but arguably those two parties may be best placed. It's going to really annoy half of the electorate. So whilst there is nothing inevitable, what I see in the data is increased polarisation and a very clear split amongst the electorate. And it's a very clear left-right split, to be honest. And where you place yourself on the left and right has become a very powerful predictor of who you vote for. But the left is much more split than the right. So, you know, Sinn Féin, Social Democrats, Labour, Greens, People Before Profit, you know, there's a lot of different moving votes there. And of course, as Pat mentioned, given that we are a PRSTV system and where you place your numbers and how you transfer and who you transfer to, that all plays into it. So, yeah, I agree. There's nothing predictable about it. But I do think that given the housing situation, that Sinn Féin are very well placed to adopt, you know, what they are very clear about, a very clear left populist strategy. It's working for them. And whether or not they're able to build a big enough coalition to enter government is entirely dependent on what happens with the other parties. If the Social Democrats do really well, I can't see Labour would have to basically go into government with them too, maybe the Greens as well. And would Fianna Fáil enter as a junior coalition partner with Sinn Féin? Probably not. So I arguably will end up with a really hung parliament for a long time, and you could end up with, you know, Sinn Féin in government, but very dependent upon kind of votes on the opposition benches, which means that they may not be able to actually get their first preferences through in terms of policy. So yeah, if I was to put a prediction on it, it's going to be a lot of uncertainty.
That fragmented left vote, Jen, which Aidan refers to there, you know, there's four, five, six, arguably six parties, depending on how you define them. There was a vote left strategy put forward at the last election by a number of the parties, including Sinn Féin, and it did benefit some of those parties, I think particularly the smaller left-wing parties, who picked up seats, partly because maybe there wasn't a second Sinn Féin candidate in some of those constituencies. Can that hold together, do you think? I mean, it's a very disparate group, isn't it?
It's a very disparate group, and there's not really, I think that's a really good point, there isn't really any cohesion there, is there, amongst the left? There's been attempts before by, I specifically remember Brendan Howlin previously, the last election, talking about, you know, he would be encouraging this vote left strategy. And Labour have kind of made overtures in the past towards the Social Democrats, which have been pretty much rejected for a variety of reasons on their own part. And it just goes to reinforce that idea that there isn't a cohesion on the left. And you're right about your point about candidates that got over the line in the election because they benefited from those Sinn Féin votes. Like, I'm thinking specifically of people like Holly Cairns, maybe even Verona Murphy in Wexford. You know, when you get later down those counts and the transfers come in, and they did benefit either independent candidates or candidates on the left. And I do think, you know, we'll see that play out. And I suppose the coming by-election will tell us a lot, I think, about how that will work. Now, I know it's one constituency, and I know that constituency has its very own specific characteristics, but we will all be watching very carefully to see how do those transfers pan out, and will there be a coalition bonus for each party? Will they transfer to each other? And I think we'll be watching that to see, you know, it might give us a flavour of what's to come in the future years, but I definitely get the feeling that the left will have to find a way to band together to present a more unified voice, because when you're split into disparate groups, it's very hard for people to understand, or it's very hard for people to get a grasp of exactly why they should be voting for, you know, the left as a whole, as a block. So it'll be really interesting to see, in the by-election, how those transfers pan out.
What do you think of that, Pat? I mean, Aidan's point that, and I think you referred to this in your column, the fact that the two centre-right parties, that there are overall, there's been some variation in the polls, and Fianna Fáil going down a bit and Fine Gael going up a bit, but that block of votes has remained fairly solid, and it is also more coherent, which might well be extremely important from the point of view of transfers, be it in this upcoming by-election or in a larger election.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the polling, say, this year, the combined support for the government parties is, about 5 or 6 points down if you average across all the published polls for this year. You would say it's about 5 or 6 points down from where it was at the time of the general election last year. So, you know, that's a decline, but it's certainly not a collapse. And particularly, we've seen as Fine Gael support has grown, and Fine Gael support grew very substantially. They had a horrific election in February 2020. But during the period of that caretaker Fine Gael government, between the holding of the general election in February of last year and the formation of the new government at the end of June, Fine Gael support, and that was, of course, during the first wave of the pandemic, Fine Gael support recovered dramatically during that position, as did the personal rating for the then Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. And the party's numbers have kind of stayed up since then. Fianna Fáil's numbers fell away in the same period and fell away after the government was formed. But the combined vote for the two parties is not a million miles away from where it was. I mean, I think if you look at the broader question of a route to government for Sinn Féin after the next general election, it has two potential routes. One, it has a left-led coalition. And I think, you know, certainly the numbers weren't there, despite lots of people kind of pretending they were, the numbers weren't there for that after the general election last year. And in fact, you know, the numbers were a long way away from it. I think if you take into consideration the fact that many of the left wing or left leaning deputies, be they independents, are part of the radical left cohort, as represented by People for Profit Solidarity. I think they're not guys who will be in the mix up for inclusion in a government, because their political model, as it currently exists, is not really interested in the inevitable compromises that government requires. So, you know, I'm wary of my own warnings, and I'm not going to say absolutely that a left-led coalition couldn't happen. Of course it could if it gets enough votes, but the prospect of it getting enough votes is not, I won't say remote, but it is at present, looking at trends, a pretty unlikely one. So what's Sinn Féin's other route to government? It's via coalition with either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. I would think the only one of those that is on would be a Fianna Fáil coalition, which would have to happen, I think, under a different leader, and probably after a very difficult election for Fianna Fáil, both of which seem to me to be eminently within the realm of the possible. So I think the most likely route to government for Sinn Féin at this stage, looking at where things stand at the moment, is probably a coalition with Fianna Fáil.
I wonder what you think about that, Aidan. I mean, listening to that there, I mean, apart from it being very fissiparous, the correct word, or even a word at all, but
very nice.
apart from being fissiparous, I'll use it again. The various small parties who might form for part of a bloc, a left bloc, or ultimately a left coalition, they're very different, and there is a question about, you know, the aspirations of what you might call the more centre left parties, which would probably include the Greens, Labour, and the Social Democrats, and the fondness or the propensity of their voters to transfer to or support a Sinn Féin led government. And then on the other hand, as Pat talks about the PBP and Solidarity, and even within PBP and Solidarity, you do get into the Popular Front of Judea kind of thing with that at some point. But there seems to be some of these arcane debates about what Trotsky did in 1919 in St. Petersburg seem to play into an internal debate amongst them about whether to remain entirely outside of the corridors of power, or maybe to enter into an alliance of some sort.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, to be honest, when I imagine or try to figure out or, you know, do any sort of probability analysis of what a left-led government might look like in Ireland, it's very hard for me to imagine PBB being part of that, because I think their reason to be is to oppose. And I just can't imagine them entering into government and having to deal with the constraints of governing and all the trade-offs and all the complexities of policy, because I think it is a very staunchly driven ideological vote. But I could be completely wrong about that. Maybe these smaller groups do actually put together some sort of front and say, look, do you know what? We actually wouldn't mind a ministry. We wouldn't mind actually getting into government. But you see what happened to Podemos, for example, in Spain. They just completely collapsed effectively. Well, not collapsed, it's too much of an exaggeration, but they completely collapsed in Madrid anyway. And so I think there is that kind of sense of, you know, entering into government is unless it is a big, strong, you know, very left-led government, I just can't see it. So I tend to agree. I mean, I would imagine some sort of home parliament, to be honest. Now, I think a lot depends, like, there a lot of people within Fianna Fáil would see themselves as a centre-left party. And you know, that's often pointed out to me by people in Fianna Fáil in the research that I do. And I think even Jim O'Callaghan I've heard him several times identify Fianna Fáil as a centre-left party. But does that mean that they would enter into coalition with Fianna Fáil as a junior coalition partner? I find that hard to imagine or hard to see. So yeah, who knows? But again, at the same time, maybe Sinn Féin do get a massive surge, right? Maybe Sinn Féin do actually run multiple candidates and they do end up picking up sufficient votes to be able to govern, much like Fianna Fáil did in the late 90s, early 2000s, with one smaller partner. And that could be the Social Democrats and the Greens could be the bridge between the two. I mean, that's not completely unrealistic either. Again, I'll just emphasize the housing thing. I really would not underestimate how much anger there is out there and how many people out there are really, quite frankly, fed up with their living situation, that they would just say, no, well, I'm going to go for Fianna Fáil. I don't care. Now, we'll probably move on to talk about that. Does that mean that they will be able to actually solve the problem in government? No, maybe not. But it could be the wave that basically gives them that type of Fianna Fáil, massive surge that Fianna Fáil got in the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe.
And before we move on to look at what a Sinn Féin government might look like, Jen, just to look at that point, because equally, I suppose, just as Pat says, that there is always a possibility, a strong possibility, that Sinn Féin won't achieve its objectives in the next election, there is the possibility that it might exceed its objectives. And we do know that within PRSTV, there is a kind of a tipping point that occurs somewhere around the, depending upon the size of the other parties, but somewhere around the mid-30s, where you actually get a seat bonus. You know, for example, I think Fine Gael in 2011 with 36% of the votes got 75, 76 seats, you know. So there is a point there. There is a possible path to a very strong Sinn Féin-led government as well.
I think so. I think if you listen to political scientists who are far more eloquent than I am, they talk about observing the trend as opposed to just, you know, one result or one, whether it be a local election, whether it be the general election last year. And the trend for Sinn Féin is upwards. And I think the point about housing is particularly relevant, because I absolutely agree with Aidan. I think the anger out there has gone beyond a kind of, I think there were people who traditionally would have voted Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, and who the last time maybe hung on to that vote and who the next time will not. And it's because the issue of housing resonates in so many different ways on so many different levels. It's not just the question of somebody not being able to get on the property ladder, and it's not just the question of not being able to buy your own house. Obviously, it's the question of really unfair, very high rents. It's the question of having, you know, your kids move back in with you after you think they've flown the nest, and all of a sudden they're back in your house. It's so multifaceted, and it affects so many different age groups and all across society. And I think when you have a movement like that, when you have something as such a galvanizing force, is very, very hard to escape that. And the question is, you know, there's a long time left in this government. There's, you know, we've got a good 4 years to go. And can this government solve that in time, you know, to rescue their own fortunes? I would think not. Because if you look at the statistics, we didn't, you know, we need upwards of 35,000 new homes a year. Did we meet that last year? No. Will we meet it this year? No. And there are questions over the following years. And so much of the housing debate is ideological, even split down party lines. And I think they're going to find it very difficult to break out of that. And even the policies that they're putting forward at the moment, if you look at Dara O'Brien's shared equity scheme, you know, that has a huge amount of detractors. I'm not, you know, going to say that it's not going to work. I don't have the expertise for that. But if you look at the detail and the people who are coming out saying that it will push up prices and that it'll do nothing to address supply, which is the main issue, you would have to have concerns. And they're pushing ahead with that. So I think there's a long road to go here. But the galvanizing issue at this time is housing. There's another question about COVID, obviously, and that's about the pandemic. You know, we'd like to think that we're coming out the other side of this now. We all look at the statistics globally for countries that have high vaccination rates and see that they're plummeting the case numbers and deaths. And we see now that we've reached the 2.5 million mark. And I think TDs think that's a good news story. And, you know, even at their PPs, they say we should be getting this good news story out. The question is, is it the government that benefits from that good news story? Is it the government who are thanked for that? Or is it the health service? Because from what I'm hearing, people are very grateful to the HSE and very thankful for all of that work. But I don't hear anybody saying, you know, thanks a million, Micheál Martin, you did a great job. Having said that, I did see a poll at the weekend which shows that he's up a couple of points in approval rating. But by the time we get to the end of this road in the government, will the pandemic be in the rearview mirror? That vaccine bonus, all that stuff they're banking on, gone. And the housing crisis, very much still on the road ahead.
So, Pat, let's look at what you think is the more likely option, which is a Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil government after the next election, perhaps with another party in there to make up the mix, perhaps a three-way coalition or something. But let's take that as a, what does that government look like? Owen O'Brien shows up in the Custom House. He's the new Minister for Housing. He has been a very articulate proponent of a very different vision of housing policy in Ireland for a long time. Piers Doherty arrives in the Department of Finance. Michael McGrath remains in public expenditure. And our Taoiseach is Mary Lou MacDonald. Does everything change utterly?
Well, there's certainly quite a lot of change. That's the whole point of the thing, I suppose, from Sinn Féin's perspective. Just let me go back to for one sec on to the previous discussion there about the prospects of the numbers coming through for Sinn Féin. I think it's very clear from, and I think Aidan is correct in his analysis of it, that it is not, and I'm not suggesting for a moment that it is impossible that there is a left-led government, but the just looking at where things now, it seems to me to be a remote possibility. And I think Aidan is right. What it requires is a massive surge for Sinn Féin up into, well into the 30s, mid-late 30s in terms of a percentage of the vote and the seat bonus and all of that that is produced by that. I don't see where that comes from at the moment. Now, it is possible, going back to our earlier comments about the volatility of Irish politics, that that manifests itself at some stage over the next 3 or 4 years. But it isn't there at the moment, and I'm not sure that that the conditions will be there. I don't see the conditions arising at present for it. So it is a potential outcome, but it seems to me at this stage, looking forward, a very unlikely one. Back to your question about what does that government look like? I mean, if you think about it, I think the ideological and policy direction of that government would be overwhelmingly set by Sinn Féin. Because if you think about how it would come about, and there's kind of two stages to the process of a government being formed in Ireland. There's the election, and that takes place, and there's hyper-local competition, you know, between candidates of the same party, and on there's, you know, and all the vicissitudes of an election campaign takes place. Then the dust settles after that. Everybody does their count and sees what's possible. And there is usually a couple of possible governments, or there may be a couple of possible governments in the immediate aftermath of an election. And then that separate process of government formation takes place. So if there is to be a Sinn Féin Fianna Fáil government led by Sinn Féin, what has just happened is a devastatingly bad election for Fianna Fáil, and therefore the party is in a weak position to negotiate for its participation in the next government. So I think that Sinn Féin is heading into government, and if you can try and cast your mind forward and imagine the sort of circumstances in which that is taking place, it's a historic breakthrough for Sinn Féin. You can imagine the atmosphere around that, and all the political momentum is with Sinn Féin. So it sets the ideological and policy direction for that government. I think that there will be two overriding priorities for that government. The first would be the implementation of the Sinn Féin election manifesto, which will be overwhelmingly redistributionist. It will involve an expansion of the state, will involve much greater public investment in areas such as housing, but also the health service, social service, and so forth. And we can gauge that by looking back at the last Sinn Féin manifesto for the February 2020 election, and guess that something similar will be repeated. Now, parts of that will be negotiated out in the negotiations on a programme for government, but it will still form the basis of the next programme for government. That will also be, you know, involve the transfer of resources from some parts of the economy to those in which Sinn Féin wants to see huge public investment. The second part of the government's raison d'etre, really, will be a big push for a united Ireland. There will be a white paper on a united Ireland. There could be a specific department set up, or at least a specific unit as between the Department of Foreign Affairs and the Department of the Taoiseach. And one of the chief priorities of that government would be to be a persuader for Irish unity. And you would see, I think, much greater, bear in mind that Sinn Féin still likely to be in government in the north at that stage, and possibly leading the government in the north at that stage. So you would see a much greater degree of cooperation between Stormont ministers and ministers in the Dublin government. And the position of the Irish government vis-a-vis the British government would be to persuade it to commit to a border poll. And you would see all these things like a citizens' assembly and so forth, and many, many more, I think, on the ground sort of building blocks towards a united Ireland. So those two would be the overriding priorities 1980s, the achievement of a left-wing economic manifesto and the achievement of a united Ireland, both of which would be changes such as we haven't seen in the government of this state in half a century, I suspect.
Indeed, indeed, for at least, and indeed, Aidan, I mean, regardless of what anybody's personal view might be on the more redistributive policy which Pat describes, or indeed the push for Irish unity, taken together, it makes for the most activist government, arguably, in the history of the state, or certainly since the early 1930s.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, it would be the first time that effectively the Irish state has been led by a different party from Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. So, I mean, it would be a massive structural break from the past. And, you know, I think, you know, Sinn Féin are quite clear about, you know, their socialist republican ideals. And I think what would work in Sinn Féin's favour is that internationally and in Europe, the kind of mood is shifting. The macroeconomic paradigm that has governed public policy in effect for the past 20 or 30 years has shifted. And there's more space now on the monetary and fiscal side to actually pursue the type of centre-left, and like, to be honest, their economic manifesto is pretty centre-left in European terms, to pursue that type of public policy programme. So in that sense, you know, what's happening in Europe, what's happening internationally in the kind of post-COVID, post-pandemic world would actually, I think, fit and complement the type of fiscal policies they would ultimately need to pursue if they were remotely close to getting to be able to deliver on certain targets, particularly on housing. I think Pat's point about the United Ireland is really interesting and very important, because I would imagine a large part of their vote in the Republic and it will not even be thinking about that, quite frankly. I think their core anchor, for sure, the kind of core 10% vote they have, which is unwavering, is likely to be concerned about that. But I think for the vast majority of people who'll be voting, I nuance that, for a significant percentage of the people who are voting Sinn Féin in the next election, they'll be driven by the economic policies, and they'll be voting on the basis of what they're going to deliver on housing. So if they're not able to deliver on those things in government, I think that does pose an interesting question. What would happen post that election? Because I struggle to see how the scale of the housing and urban crises in Ireland could be fixed basically within the next 7 years, put it that way. Now, I think a lot of people will give Sinn Féin the benefit of the doubt if they see a big structural shift and they say, look, we're going all out public investment. We're going to basically build mass public housing. We're going to sell it on a cost price. We're going to have some sort of scheme in place whereby the state owns the land. And you said, they do have, you know, policies on this. Maybe people will give them time to get to make that happen. But as we've said at the beginning, you know, politics takes place in time and there's a lot of volatility, and maybe people will not be that patient.
Can I just ask you a follow-up on that, Aidan, a brief one, which is that, I mean, as you say, this MMT, I think it is, Modern Macroeconomic Theory, there's a kind of the tides of fashion in economic theory has shifted quite dramatically over the last few years. And in a way that gives Sinn Féin a bit more credibility than it might have had a few years ago in terms of some of these policies. But it still also adheres to certain policies which have been criticised as populist, for example, being against carbon tax, being against property tax, being against a number of things which in other centre-left parties in other European countries are accepted as a necessary part of the economic mix. Is it likely to be able to fudge these things, to continue fudging these things in government because of this current economic fashion?
I don't think so. I think, you know, the issue of property taxes is the perfect example of this. I think, you know, there is something qualitatively unique about Ireland whereby parties of the left typically adopt fiscal positions on taxation, which would be very similar to what basically neoliberal parties in Europe would adopt. And I don't think that's consistent. And I don't think that's realistic if you are going to deliver, because as a small open economy, you do need to have a solid fiscal base. You need to have good revenue, solid revenue coming in order to make the case for engaging in using public debt for public investment. Now, the fiscal rules in Europe, I don't see them coming back anytime soon. I think, you know, not just the kind of shift in fiscal policy in Europe and internationally, there's a realization that, look, if you can use fiscal policy and monetary policy to tackle a public health crisis, then why not for a climate emergency? Why not for solving things like the housing urban crisis? Why not tackle these big societal challenges? If we're going to align fiscal and monetary policy more closely, if the central bank is going to be as active as it has been for the past, we don't even call it unconventional monetary policies anymore because they've been in place now since 2008, right? Or 2010. So if the ECB is doing all of this, then maybe we ought to be redirecting some of those resources towards more productive activity as opposed to driving up the price of assets such as housing. So I think there is a growing realization that there's something really out of kilter with fiscal and monetary policy. And I think, you know, it's obviously a left government would be better placed to say, do you know what, we ought to be doing that, but we ought to be doing it for not those people, but for those people. And I think that's a very powerful narrative and message that left parties will begin to pursue all over Europe.
Jen, how do you think the United Ireland, let's say, for example, there's a minister for reuniting Ireland in a Sinn Féin government. How do you think that plays in terms of domestic politics, you know, really on the ground, as opposed to a sort of slightly up in the clouds sort of aspiration?
Do you mean now or in terms of...
I mean in terms of if you have a government which is coming in, which has a, you know, I think we all agree would have a, you know, a very radical agenda by comparison with previous governments, and including alongside that economic agenda, has a really forceful commitment to a referendum north and south on unification of the country. Do you think that might be seen as a distraction? I get a sense from Aidan that part of the electoral base might see that as, you know, not being the most important thing to be thinking about.
Maybe it's not viewed as being the most important thing, but there's obviously a huge amount of support within Sinn Féin for a United Ireland. And there was a poll out the weekend which kind of reinforced that again. How it plays out is very difficult to know, to be honest. And I'd be lying if I said that I could see it in my mind's eye. I think when it comes to issues in Northern Ireland, the situation is always and has always been very volatile. And if you look at what's played out over the last number of months, you would have to question whether the Sinn Féin, kind of the majoritism, I suppose, of once you've got that 50 plus one majority in favour of holding a border poll, both north and south, which obviously you would need under the Good Friday Agreement. It's very difficult to see when you get to that tipping point of that being enough of a vote to push that through in a way that doesn't cause significant disruption in Northern Ireland. And the fact of the matter is, like, nobody wants to go back to, you know, the Troubles. Nobody wants to see the scenes that we've seen play out over the last number of months. And it is so incredibly delicate. And it's not just a matter of, right, time for a border poll now. We've decided and we think now we have just enough support to get it. So it's difficult to see how they tread that board while maintaining peace. And I think that's a big question for them, because it's very easy to kind of have a slogan and say, you know, United Ireland, et cetera, et cetera, and even to pull out poll ratings. It's a very different thing to actually conduct that in a way that maintains peace. And I don't know, is the answer, how that would play out and whether, in fact, if you do it sooner rather than later, that's a beneficial thing. And if they did that, whether they would regret it or whether they would probably be pushing something a little bit too far, a little bit too fast. So it remains to be seen.
I mean, the fact is, Pat, that even if Sinn Féin is in government, both in Dublin and in Belfast, it's not within its gift to call a referendum in Northern Ireland. That's under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, the Belfast Agreement. That's the duty of the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, on the basis that I think the wording is that there's likely to be a vote in favour. That's actually unlikely to happen in the term of the next government, no matter who's in that government, I think.
I refer the learned gentleman to my earlier comments about volatility and predictions being quite difficult, especially about the future. But certainly from this point in time, we know it's not going to happen, I suspect, in the lifetime of the current British government. Say that goes to 2023, 2024. I think one of the factors that you would have to consider is what happens in Scotland, because if Scotland voted to leave the United Kingdom, though I'm of the view that is receding as a possibility at present, given the sort of economic wrench that it would entail now that the UK is out of the European Union. But you know, leave the possibility or otherwise of it aside. I think you know the sort of psychological blow that would involve to the idea of the United Kingdom and therefore to Northern Unionism is very difficult to see how that might play out. But you're absolutely right. You know, there won't be a referendum on unity in the North until such time as the British government adjudges that one is likely to succeed. Now, at present, I think it is, you know, there's no evidence that it is likely to succeed and lots of evidence that it isn't likely to succeed at this point in time, whatever, about a few years down the line. And there is certainly no evidence that a British government is going to adjudge it to be likely to succeed. So it seems to me to be in the short to medium term a somewhat remote prospect. But what I think for the purposes of our discussion about what a Sinn Féin government might look like, in a way that is, if not irrelevant, then not the not the most important thing. The most important thing is that the policy of an Irish government led by Sinn Féin would be reoriented toward the pursuit of unity in a real and meaningful way. And that would be, in fact, I suspect, the central and the most important priority of that government and the thing to which, or the goal to which, it would be prepared to water down all its other goals in the pursuit of. So I think that, you know, if it decides, and, you know, let's engage in a, you know, in a bit of speculation. Let's say there is, you know, a British government after a successful Scottish secession referendum, are led maybe by the Labour government or by a different, an English-dominated Tory party that, you know, was less committed to the union between Northern Ireland and what was left of the UK than is presently the case. And we know certainly that British and English voters don't care a whit about the continuation of the union between England and Northern Ireland. So perhaps those circumstances are different, and perhaps a Sinn Féin led government suddenly sees a door opening to a possible unity referendum in the North. Perhaps not, but that situation is certainly imaginable. And in those circumstances, then I think that a Sinn Féin government would not let any of its long-term socioeconomic goals get in the way of a push for unity.
A question, a broader question to you, Aidan. Your colleagues in the political science world have sometimes had difficulties, I think, exactly, you know, figuring out where Sinn Féin sits on the international political spectrum by comparison with other countries. It's a left-wing party, and it's also a nationalist party. There aren't that many other examples. That there are some, probably Catalonia and a couple of other places. Equally, this moment, should it arrive when Mary Lou MacDonald walks into government buildings and is Taoiseach, is the culmination of a long historical process going back to the 1990s. Some people will see it as the inevitable outcome of that process of Irish republicanism becoming reconciled to the institutions of the state. Others view it with horror. There's a fair few of them around in the commentariat. They haven't all kept their jobs recently, but, you know, there is still that view out there as well. But there's a point of view, and I've seen some of your colleagues in political science make this, that in Ireland, Sinn Féin appeals to a certain type of views and a certain part of the electorate, which goes to quite different places in other countries. It's broadly defined as populism and sometimes as right populism and nativism and all those kinds of things. And because it has been excluded or kept outside the corridors of power up until now, it's still able to represent itself as not being of the elites, which those voters are bucking against, really. But when it enters government, those days are over and everything changes. And what happens to that populist, anti-establishment, anti-elite part of Irish politics then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very good and a very important question. I don't know the answer to it, but I think you're right. I think Sinn Féin's surge is prefaced on kind of an anti-system politics. And I think where Ireland differed comparatively in the aftermath of the great financial crisis, that there was no emerging new challenger party. You know, Sinn Féin occupied that space. And of course, as you mentioned, they are a historical party. They've been around for a long time. So they occupied the kind of challenger space and, you know, have built their base from that. And strategically and in terms of their strategy, it's very clearly populist. And I think that anti-system politics is central to their success. When then government, and you have to deal with the complexities of governing and policy making, and you have to basically become, to a certain extent, a manager of the state, and you have to engage in technocratic as opposed to populist politics, then who knows? Who knows where that vote will go? At the moment, I think, it's not unimaginable, right, that Fianna Fáil could return to their roots in opposition and engage in a little bit more populism and engage in a more populist strategy, let's say. Because I think, you know, there's probably a part of Fianna Fáil that would benefit from being in opposition for some time in order to ask themselves the question, who exactly are we anymore? What is our identity? Where did we come from? Where are we at now? And I think it's Fianna Fáil that has the real identity crisis, and Sinn Féin has a very clear, solid identity about where they're going. And I think that's feeding into the varying success of those two parties. And clearly, Sinn Féin are taking their anchor. I mean, people forget, even though Fianna Fáil, you could never call Fianna Fáil a left party in any kind of objective sense, given their kind of core fiscal policies and so on. But, you know, they have obviously pursued policies that would be considered to be social democratic in other countries. And in that sense, the crisis of social democracy across Europe is manifesting itself in a crisis of Fianna Fáil within Ireland. And the same votes that social democratic parties are losing to challenger parties in the rest of Europe, which is going in different places depending on the country, in Ireland it's going to Sinn Féin. Because the kind of core anchor of rural and working class Ireland that Fianna Fáil built its party from is no longer there. And that core anchor is clearly with Sinn Féin now. So I think Fianna Fáil could consider a strategy, and who knows, maybe Fianna Fáil becomes the new anti-system party in a new government. But of course, this is completely speculative. My concern would be, and I think this concern will be shared widely, is that an anti-immigrant far-right party comes along and begins to occupy that anti-system space. That is not unimaginable. We can clearly see that there's a strong nativist sentiment emerging in different parts of the Irish electorate. There's a big rural-urban divide in some of those things. And that would be something to watch. And I think that's something to be very concerned of, because if there is any kind of teleological dimension to this, which I don't think there is, in other countries, it's all moving in that direction, where it's not happening in Ireland yet.
Aidan, I think by uttering the word teleological, you've brought the podcast to an end. We always close it when that word comes up. And that is, I think we have come to the conclusion that we have absolutely no idea what might happen. And every eventuality remains on the table. Is that correct? Can we all agree with that? We will leave it at that, and we'll be around to observe and to discuss it all. But for the moment, thanks to Pat Jen and to Aidan, and to our producer Suzanne Brennan and our engineer JJ Vernon. We're going to be back very soon. Do remember, you can mail us with your thoughts and your questions at politicspodcast@irishtimes.com. But until the next time, thanks very much indeed for listening.